Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. It's approximately 9:30 a.m., 093 hours, in a place called Fallujah, Anbar Province, Iraq. The date is 2004, March, late March, March 31st. There is an inconsequential and routine convoy moving out, resupplying food for the U.S. military, for its colleagues and friends and people in the Iraq War. This convoy, it's driven by men who are under the umbrella of ESS, is itself a subcontractor to other subcontractors. There's a long trail. ESS is contracting the Kuwait Regency. That's a subcontractor to KBR, the very famous construction firm out of Texas. But underneath all this, and you will solve why we're starting at this moment, is the matter of Blackwater and four men from Blackwater who are security contractors at this point, early in the Iraq War, to help us understand what happens that day in Fallujah and how it becomes part of American history and part of the unsolved crisis in Iraq, with the Islamic State now overrunning and dominating Fallujah, is Eric Prince, who was the founder and former CEO of Blackwater Incorporated, also Eric Prince the SEAL, Eric Prince of Holland, Michigan. But I want to start in Fallujah because Eric was in the United States at the time and gets the phone call early in the morning after these events. Eric, congratulations. This is your book, Civilian Warriors, the inside story of Blackwater and the unsung heroes of the War on Terror. These four men, you introduce them very carefully. How were they chosen? What were they that day? What was their mission? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Thanks for having me. Their mission that day was merely to escort some trucks to pick up some catering equipment, some kitchen equipment, from one base and move it to another because there was a changeover from the Army to the Marine Corps in the area of Fallujah, west of Baghdad. And as they drove into the area the night before, they ended up bedding down at one of those bases. They drew some maps. One of the four, Jerry Zavko, spoke pretty fluent Arabic, and he communicated with some of the local Iraqi police and Civil Defense Corps people.
To Camp Ridgeway. They were headed out. Was this a routine matter at this point for Blackwater? This would be the kind of task that you would coordinate from the U.S. and the people in field would coordinate?
Yes. The company was running a few different contracts at the time from some personal security stuff for VIPs to, I was actually in that area just a few miles away from where the actual ambush of these guys took place just 3 weeks before. And our mission there was to protect some explosive ordnance contractors that were blowing up hundreds of thousands of pounds of captured Iraqi ordnance. So I'd been to that area. I knew Zavko from that visit. And instead of leading them, on a safe path through a dangerous area, the Iraqi, some bad Iraqi Civil Defense Corps and policemen basically set them up in an ambush.
Let's go to the ambush. You write, 9:30 a.m., a group of boys approach the vehicles. They're stopped in this convoy.
Because of traffic.
Yes, and the boys put their hands out. They're talking to Batalonia, one of the four, and there is nothing suspicious at this point, to my knowledge. They're not reading that there's an ambush. There's been nothing like this. This will turn into a global event, what's about to happen. The Iraqis open fire. It feels, Eric, that this was a setup all the way through. Is that a fair reading of this?
We certainly believe in intelligence. The intelligence services looked deep into this, and it was very much a setup by some Iraqis. And those kids came up to the car to verify that those indeed were the Americans in that car. And you know, the men were shot in cold blood.
A lot of gunfire. Suddenly, two try to escape. They're shot down. Their bodies are then mutilated, and this is all constructed as a provocation that the United States military will answer. I'm starting here, Eric, for a very good reason, because your story turns on the development and the growth of security contractors for the United States of America. You were there at the beginning. You saw this. When you got the phone call, it was 3:30 a.m. back in Virginia where you were. When you got the phone call, did you recognize that this was an operation directed to provoke the U.S. military, that this was Al-Qaeda itself?
The images of the bodies being desecrated, burned, hung from a bridge.
Right.
It was very reminiscent of what the radicals did to the U.S. troops in Mogadishu back in '93, and you know it was absolutely a made for media gruesome event to try to turn the stomachs and break the will of the American people.
And it did provoke the U.S. military immediately. They started an operation into Fallujah. I believe it was the Marines, but it was a full-scale operation. It was going to use the Iraqi forces to move in and retaliate against an al-Qaeda operation. But it was interrupted. Eric, it's like this is foreshadowing of the war. Politics came right down on the operation against the Fallujah attackers. Did you recognize at this point that the Iraq war was changing from one mission, which was to win, to another mission that was to be used as a political badminton?
You know, I guess I wasn't focused on the politics as much then, but I just realized, you know, Fallujah, Ramadi, a number of these cities had never been pacified, had never really been occupied
right.
by U.S. forces. They swept through in a very rapid, fantastically executed maneuver warfare operation to get to Baghdad and to capitulate the country. The thing is, Fallujah never capitulated. Ramadi never capitulated. Those had to be taken block by block and to defeat those were hotbeds for radicals and for Republican Guard holdovers from the Iraqi army.
And remains so. Fallujah, now, right after the election, Phantom Fury is launched, which is meant to pacify and neutralize Fallujah. We know now that in the subsequent years in the Iraqi civil war and war that Zarqawi himself, the bandit Jordanian who leads al-Qaeda in Iraq, will use Fallujah as headquarters, and he is a horrific human being. He's a sadistic brute who punishes the Iraqi people incredibly so much that they almost they come to reject al-Qaeda. That now is that same Fallujah that is in the hands of the Islamic State. But your operation was there at the beginning, November 7th, right after the election. George Bush is reelected. Did you understand then that you were going to become part of the political conversation and argument in the United States?
You know, after we really felt as a company, we felt that the winds change of how much more violent Iraq became, because Fallujah happened on March 31st. 2 days later, a couple of our convoys were moving between Baghdad, downtown Baghdad, where the embassy is, out to the airport, ambushed, some of our men killed by heavy automatic weapons fire. And then a few days later, the radical Shia rose up in the south and attacked a number of towns, including the kind of their holy city of Najaf. Our guys ended up holding off with a handful of Marines and other Army communications people a 1,000-man-plus assault led by these eight former special operations guys who happened to be working for Blackwater.
All right, we've opened with all the action. We're going to go back to the beginning of Blackwater and back to the beginning of Eric Prince. He's the author of Civilian Warriors, The Inside Story of Blackwater and the Unsung Heroes of the War on Terror. I'm John Batchelor. This is The John Batchelor Show. I'm John Batchelor. A small, friendly East Coast church is taking a nonprofit 8-day trip to the Holy Land, visiting major sites up and down Israel and the West Bank. for the amazing modest price of $2,500. This includes airfare, lodging, main meals, transport, meeting government officials, everything. Leaving on February 12th, returning February 20th, 2016, travel both to learn and worship and to support Israel. There are still seats available, a few, and one or more for you. Masada alone is the reason for the trip. You can look down from the remains of Herod's palace grounds and see the remains of the Roman camps that came to destroy the Jewish resistance. Go to InfinityBibleChurch.com. That's InfinityBibleChurch.com. I'm John Batchelor. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. Eric Prince, he's the author of an autobiography, Civilian Warriors, The Inside Story of Blackwater and the Unsung Heroes of the War on Terror. But a note here, Eric, it is your story as well. Holland, Michigan, your dad, you celebrate him in your book. He looks to be a self-made man. Making what, Eric?
Well, his dad died when he was only 13, so he rapidly became the man of the house. He was working 40 hours a week already in middle school and high school. Put himself through college, a couple of years in the Air Force, and then he worked for a machinery business. They made die-cast machinery, and he didn't like the new management, so he started his own. And he left with six guys and very little life savings and started a business, and they scraped for a number of years. And then in the early 70s, they came up with the lighted sun visor. So if you sit in your car and you tip the visor down and the light goes on when the lid goes up, that was their product, and they built hundreds of thousands, if not millions of those over the years, and they kind of rode the wave of automotive interior outsourcing. So all the interior stuff in a car, car makers let someone else do that, and so they developed the digital compass, digital thermometer, door panels, consoles, all that stuff in an inside of a car, and the business grew to 5,000 employees. All non-union in Holland, Michigan.
Entrepreneurship comes naturally to Eric Prince. He attends Annapolis, then graduates from Hillsdale College. He makes a decision to go back into the Navy, despite the taunting of what you'd have to say some members of the U.S. Navy. He becomes a SEAL, which is the elite unit that operates in sea and air and land. He marries in 1991, and as a SEAL, you're SEAL Team 8. You were deployed in Haiti and Yugoslavia. What was your decision to become a SEAL? How did that connect to your dad's work, Eric?
You know, I grew up around airplanes because my dad's business had a few airplanes, and I always loved flying. So I soloed three aircraft the morning of my 16th birthday, and I got my license when I was 17. And I actually went to the Naval Academy planning to be a Navy pilot, but I didn't like the Academy, but I loved the Navy. And it was actually at the Academy that I learned of the SEAL teams. It was really before they ever had any publicity or notoriety. So I applied and I got accepted, and it was very hard, but a phenomenal experience.
And your dad celebrated this. Your dad left you in 95, but he certainly knew you were a member of SEAL Team 8. Was he pleased with your decision that you weren't going to go into business, you were going to serve Uncle Sam?
He was very happy. I mean, me going to work for my dad after college was never an option. He wanted me to go do my own thing, cut my own path, and he said, you'll be very happy if you start a business and do it yourself. And I was going to do all that and then eventually go work with him later, but a heart attack of his cut that short.
And then your wife's difficulties, health problems immediately compelled you, because you had a young and growing family, to leave the SEALs. And there you were. You had entrepreneur roots with your dad. You had Navy roots with your SEAL Team 8. And you came on one day, sitting around, Eric Prince came up with the idea of Blackwater. Well, you named it for a place near the Great Dismal Swamp. What was the genius? How did it come to you? Were you sitting at a bus stop when you said, you know, we can train guys who used to be in special forces, guys who used to be in military, guys who want to be in the police. We can train them for Uncle Sam. Where did that come, Eric?
I came up with the idea in our SEAL Team ready room on the USS America while we were deployed off the coast of Croatia and Bosnia. There were, SEAL teams, special operations units, had been using private facilities since the 1970s, but no one had ever done it on an industrial scale. on a very large, very capable scale, and I was in the usual position of having some money from my dad's business and knowing what needed to be, and you know, I knew nothing of defense contracting, but I knew what the SEAL teams needed, and I needed to get out to sort out some things with my family, and so I really started the business as a way to stay connected to a job, a community I really loved.
You carve a dystopian romance out of the Great Dismal Swamp. There are photographs in the book. And your original mission statement is you're going to offer it as a training facility, a private training facility, which is expensive but is enjoyed by police departments, by municipalities across the country. And then along comes 9/11, 2001. Where were you when you heard, Eric?
Well, even before that, John, you know, when the Columbine, the terrible high school tragedy happened,
right.
We built a mock high school. And then when the USS Cole was blown up, the Navy came to us and we ended up training tens of thousands of sailors. And then the morning of 9/11, I was giving my kids a ride to school, and I heard on the radio about an airplane that went into the Twin Towers. And then I stopped at the barber shop, and we flipped on the channel and we were watching, and I saw that second aircraft go in to the Twin Towers, and I knew, as everyone that saw that, how much the world changed then.
Did your phone ring then? Is that when the U.S., the various elements of the national security apparatus recognized that they needed security contractors, or is that going to evolve through Afghanistan into Iraq?
That evolved over the next 4 or 5 months.
Right.
The first big bulge of activity was really for training, for special operations units, intelligence community units that are getting ready quickly to go overseas. And then the following spring, early spring, I got a call and said, "Hey, Eric, could you put 18 guys together like yourself?" And I said, "Absolutely." He said, "Then be in my office the next morning," and that was the next chapter.
We're going from Eric and a couple of his cell phone buddies to, at the top, if I read your stats here correctly, Eric, you're about 2,500 people, a fleet of 73 or more aircraft, 12 or more countries, a database of 50,000 special forces operators. So my numbers might be off, but that's the right scale. And you're doing that within 6 years. It's incredible, Eric. Who did you get to help you with the books? It's overwhelming. We didn't have really good internet back in 2003.
I have to tip my hat to Gary Jackson, who quickly became the president of the company. Talking to Gary is like talking to a coiled spring.
Uh-huh.
He's an amazing amount of energy, and he was also an early computer geek back in the 90s. I mean, he was the guy that bought the next higher-speed modem that you could get for dial-up, and he actually made our first website on a weekend while he was down leading a counter-narcotics platoon in the Caribbean. And, you know, we built a machine. Being around my dad and seeing how a factory operated, we tried to build a factory that could do the recruiting, vetting, equipping, training, and deploying of special people that are going to go do a difficult job. And so that's why we were able to bid on these competitive bids and win, and we could be the low-cost provider because we'd really squeezed a lot of the waste of the process out of doing it.
After Fallujah, after the election of 2004, your contract for diplomatic security looks to grow straight up to about 1,000 or more. And at the peak in 2007, you had 2,500 contractors in many different countries, about 1,100 in Iraq. Did Paul Bremer come to depend upon you? And do you think he over-depended? Because you have some regrets here, Eric.
Well, you know, we got pulled into the diplomatic security mission because the large multi-billion dollar incumbent company, DynCorp, could not keep up. Mm-hmm. And was not complying, not performing. And so a state came to us because we were doing some niche activities in the country already, and they said, "Can you do this?" And we did, and we scaled up and did it. Now, you know, I certainly, hindsight is 2020. I regret doing diplomatic security because it became such a hyper-politicized mission that just wasn't worth it, and it ended up wrecking the business and, you know, with all the secondary and tertiary effects. I, you know, if we just stayed in the training in aviation business, we would have had no much less drama, let's say.
And it was Fallujah that raises your profile. Do you believe that's why state came to you, because of Fallujah?
No. What raised our profile is when we get sued by trial lawyers who try to.
But that's many years later. I'm looking in real time in the election of 2004. What was your sense after Fallujah? Did you enjoy a tension that was supportive or antagonistic?
No. But when Fallujah happened, we were already working for the Coalition Provisional Authority, doing security for a lot of their bases around the country in protecting their VIPs. So we were there. We had aircraft there already. We were established. It certainly brought us unwelcome attention. I mean, having your people killed, and then we're accused of our men not having heavy enough weapons and not using enough violence when they get ambushed and murdered. So it's it is a thankless job either way you look at it.
You begin to sell the companies in various pieces, the Worldwide Aviation in 2010, and then Blackwater, which had been renamed XE Service, Sheet Service afterwards, in 2010. You note that you'd gone to a $2 billion business. In your exit from it, what I find ironic here, Eric, in reviewing all these facts is, the Blackwater, thank you very much, was there at the beginning. Today, there are 18,000 security contractors in Afghanistan alone, which means that there are six or more Blackwaters operating today. You built the fundamentals. Your struggles were overwhelming. But do you feel, do you take satisfaction that this is now a working piece of national security for the United States?
You know, as I talk about in the book, I feel like we were one more cog in history. Because the private sector has been part of the national security apparatus far more than people realize, really since the country was started. And I think it's a key part now, particularly as, you know, the Pentagon has become extremely expensive,
right,
and they operate with such a huge tail, such a huge logistics footprint, that they have to become leaner, they have to become a little faster and more nimble. And the private sector, I think, is one of the only vehicles to do that with, because When you run a private company, you have to know what your costs are. You have to know what each activity is worth, because you know what the price of it is. And the problem with the Pentagon is when a general can call forth 1,000 men that he doesn't have to pay for, they get to start making skewed decisions.
Eric Prince is the author of Civilian Warriors, The Inside Story of Blackwater and the Unsung Heroes of the War on Terror. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show.